This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 26th of November 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Markus Hippi. On this week's book review, I'm joined down the line by John Williams, an editor at The New York Times. Up for discussion today, we have Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, the new rock memoir by Carrie Brownstein, You Too Can Have a Body Like Mine, a look at modern-day consumerist life by Alexandra Kleeman, and we'll look at the humorous compendium of short stories by George Singleton that tell tales of the inhabitants of a place called Kalustown. That is all coming up here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, John. Your first choice today is Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, a memoir by the musician Carrie Brownstein, who's a member of the punk band Sleater-Kinney. John, what do we learn of Brownstein's life in this book?
Well, we learn a lot about her life, and especially about her life in music, because at this point, at least here, she's just as well known probably for being on the satire sketch show Portlandia with the former Saturday Night Live cast member Fred Armisen. She's become quite famous for that, and she's even spoken about how younger fans often don't really know her work with Sleater-Kinney, and when they go back and discover it through knowing her from TV, they wonder about it because its tone is so much different than the show, which is kind of gentle and mocking. And the band really made kind of a fearsome noise and had a very political bent to its lyrics. And so this book really doesn't deal with Portlandia. It's about her youth growing up, about her family life, about her being a very hyper-performative young nerd in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., and then sort of forming this punk band that became very influential and very famous in its way. Wasn't, you know, selling out stadiums, but it was very well known and still beloved, and the band got back together actually earlier this year and released a new record. So this is really about how music basically changed her life, because she went from being someone without really an outlet for her performative desires to someone who became really a guitar god of sorts.
You mentioned already that she's obviously known for the TV show Portlandia as well, a satirical series about the hipster lives of people living in Portland. Does this book have any of that sort of humor you see in the TV show?
She is funny. She's funny about herself. She definitely doesn't spare herself in her descriptions. And, you know, she makes fun of herself as a young kid when she was running for student council in the school, and the kind of goofy slogans that she had to try to get people to vote for her. She doesn't take herself very seriously. At the same time, this is a book by someone who's clearly very thoughtful, quite neurotic, I think, in some ways, and worried about things. And so it definitely comes across as a deep look into someone's psyche, rather than just she definitely doesn't come off as someone who is generally lighthearted or, you know, approaching everything with a sort of funny eye.
Do you feel like you get to know the author well? New York Times actually said that within the many rock memoirs that have been published recently, this may be the one that most nakedly exposes its author's personality.
I think that's right. I think that there's a lot of self-mythologizing here, but not in the way that you usually see from rock stars. She definitely lets us into a side that I think other people in her position might try to hide, which is that she does show herself as this very insecure person, and you know, talks about her relationships with her parents growing up. Her mother was anorexic. Her father came out as gay when she was much older, and when he was much older. And so she really lets us in on personal details, and this isn't really a book about, you know, tour anecdotes or the wild lifestyle of an indie rock star. It's much more deeply personal than that.
Well, before we move on and talk about another book, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what actually makes a good rock memoir. Then, are people after sordid stories, or do you want to be pleasantly surprised?
I think that there's a place for sordid stories. There's a great book about the exploits of the heavy metal band Motley Crue called The Dirt, which, you know, if you're looking for just wild circus stories one after the other, that's the book. I don't know that there's anything in particular, a template to follow for a great rock memoir. I think these days it seems like people feel almost obligated to write them. They're coming out in droves. And I think, you know, the less dutiful they feel, the better they are. And I think Brownstein again, doesn't really, this wasn't something that she felt she had to do because she's famous. I think she had a real need to kind of expose her way of thinking and what music has meant to her in her life.
Carrie Brownstein's Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl is out now, and it's published by Riverhead Books. Now we are going to move on to You Too Can Have a Body Like Mine, the debut novel by Alexandra Kleeman. John, could you fill us in on the storyline here?
Yes, the storyline is somewhat spare, and it's also the characters are don't even really have recognizable names. They're referred to as things like A, B, C, and D. The book is about a young woman in America who is basically dealing with the ways in which the culture makes her feel about self-image and how she should present herself. And when I wrote about the book for the Times, I described it as having some of George Saunders' loony satire and some of Don DeLillo's bone-deep paranoia. It's a lot about how you can feel overwhelmed in the culture by advertising and messages. There's a lot that's funny in the book, but there's also a lot that's unnerving about, you know, mega stores that people shop in and the soullessness of that sometimes. But there's also a series of incredibly funny commercials that she narrates for this snack called Candy Cakes. And in these commercials, there's this cartoon character named Candy Cat, and he just has a craving for this dessert that gets foiled in these increasingly inventive ways. And it reminded me a little bit of the Itchy and Scratchy cartoons from The Simpsons, if people are familiar with those. And they just have this manic, over-the-top quality to them, and she's very funny on that.
What do you think, what comment is Kleeman making on modern-day life there?
I think really what she's making a comment on in the book as a whole is that we come up with these ways to sort of satisfy our desires in commercial ways, and they're never really the thing that we need. So we just live in this constant suspended state of craving without really satisfying what we're hungry for. And I think that that's particularly well done in the first half of the book. And then in the second half of the book, the character, the main character, A, which is the woman, how we know the woman, essentially joins a cult. And a lot of the things that had in the first part of the book been hinted at or metaphorical become a lot more literal. And we see, you know, just how crazy society can become when we get brainwashed by these images.
The way the story is described and the names of the characters being A, B, and C, as you mentioned already, the whole thing gives quite a clinical feeling. Do we get to know these characters' personalities, or does it feel like a social study, this whole book?
That's a good question. I think that in the case of A, we do get to know her. She's definitely a little distant, but I think that's part of the point, and she's supposed to feel that way because of what modern life makes her feel. The other characters, I think, are more clinical, and I think in general, Kleeman has a very interesting, he's got kind of an off-kilter style, and there is something that feels like a bit of a mad scientist observing society. This is definitely not kind of conventional psychological fiction where you get close to characters and understand them. It's much more a kind of cold-eyed look at social trends and what it means to live in the 21st century.
Could you tell us more about the way in which Kleeman has fictionally represented modern America? You mentioned one invented advertising campaign there already.
Yeah, there's the series of advertisements for the candy. There's also a store called Wally's, a chain of stores. And I think this is, my guess would be that it's a mashup of sort of Target and Walmart and other big box stores like that. And she's just sort of amped these things up by a degree or two so that the employees of the company all walk around with these giant foam heads on that are made to look like the company's mascot, this character named Wally. And so they approach you in the store to see if you have any needs with, speaking to you through this sort of foam apparatus. And so I think she's taking things that we're all somewhat familiar with, but much like George Saunders, she's making them even more absurd to kind of point up some things about them. And then there are elements of the book that are more personal and less cultural, like A's relationship with a young roommate of hers, a woman named B, who becomes sort of obsessed with A and tries to make herself look like A, and about their odd relationship. And that's a more sort of claustrophobic personal angle to the book rather than a broader social satire.
Before we move on, could you tell us a bit about the author? Alexandra Kleeman is the name.
I know her through this book, I think, as most people do, because she's quite young, actually, and she's published in prestigious publications like the Paris Review and N Plus One and Zoetrope, but this is her first book, and it's been getting a lot of attention, and I think it is the kind of book that you can say about it that it's both interesting in its own right, but it also shows a great deal of promise, and that it's partly interesting because it kind of announces this new talent with a distinct voice that even if this book is uneven in some patches, I think she's someone who will be watching in the coming years. And she studied rhetoric and other subjects in school, and I think she has a real, as you said, kind of clinical eye for things, and it'll be interesting to see what she turns her attention to next.
You Too Can Have a Body Like Mine by Alexandra Kleeman is out now, and it is published by Harper. We're going to end now with a collection of short stories called Calustown by George Singleton that tell the story of the inhabitants of the town in the title. John, what sort of characters are we dealing with here?
This book is, I think, less known than the other two we've discussed so far. And Singleton is a writer who's been around for a while, actually, in the States, but is maybe working a little further under the radar. He works in a genre that I would call wacko Southern. And we're talking about, this is a fictional small town in South Carolina called Calustown. And its inhabitants are really people who, you know, aren't getting along terribly well, but there's a definite comic overtone to all of these stories. And so, you know, we meet a bar owner whose name is Worm, and he puts a sign out front of the bar that says topless, and what that means is that he's in there behind the bar not wearing a shirt while he serves people. And the stories start with sentences like this one. Until my wife discovered the unending tunnel in our backyard, we'd approached our record for ignoring each other, which is to say she'd not spoken to me for 4 days. So these are people kind of at various places near the end of their rope.
How do these stories sit together then? Do they intertwine at all?
They intertwine a little bit in terms of the town's obsessions and things like that. Characters don't really show up again. But for instance, I think one of the funniest things in the book is that in more than one story, you realize that the town's residents sort of share a disdain for General Sherman, who famously is the Union general during the American Civil War, who you know, burned and stole his way from Atlanta toward the coast to sort of terrorize the Confederacy. And Calustown's residents judge him for having passed up the town because he didn't realize how important and meaningful it was, and so he left it alone, and Calustown, you know, survived well enough, but they kind of resent the fact that they weren't, their profile wasn't considered high enough to burn and loot.
You mentioned, you gave us an idea of a couple of stories, so there, could you tell us more about the highlights in that book, something you really enjoyed?
Sure. There's one story where the town holds an Invasion of Granada festival, which Singleton calls more of a reenactment than a festival. And this is to honor the 1984 invasion of Granada when Ronald Reagan was president, which was obviously a fairly mismatched invasion and kind of a footnote in many ways in American history. But the people in the town are riled up about it. They had someone who served in it, and so they memorialize him when this day comes around. And it kind of captures the way that small towns, I think, cling to certain traditions or ways of thinking that outsiders might not understand, but that are very important to them. And it both lampoons it, but also there's this very slight, I think, affection for the characters and for what they go through.
George Singleton has been described as the unchallenged king of the comic Southern short story. And, well, when you think of this release and compare it to his previous publications, what are your thoughts?
He's working in the same vein. I think that unchallenged is a strong term. There are a lot of people who work in more or less in this vein who are very good writers. And I think of people like Joy Williams or Dennis Johnson. And Singleton's stories are not as tightly woven as theirs are. He's a very good writer, but he's not. There's something kind of loose and baggy and raconteurish about his stories. And it's kind of like sidling up to someone at a bar and having them entertain you for a while. He's got a very funny eye and an unsparing one.
The collection of short stories, Calustown by George Singleton, is out now, and it is published by Jank Books. Well, I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. John Williams, thank you very much for joining us down the line from New York. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Markus Hippi. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our weekly film review. But for now, thank you very much for listening.